Joining us is our very own Professor Andre Duvunaga. Let's welcome him. Prof is from the Northwestern Universities. And good morning, Prof, and tell me how you're doing.
Good morning, Shafat. I am fine over here on this Sunday morning, ready to talk to you, sir.
Yes, sir, Prof. The question I was posing this morning, the West is very worried, seeing that South Africa, with China and with Russia having joint military drills, and they say, you know, this comes in the first anniversary of the Ukrainian war. Maybe we can call it war in inverted commas. But what's your thoughts? Is South Africa not playing? I mean, will South Africa get some punitive reaction from the West, Prof?
So, Prof, to answer you directly, yes, I think there will be reaction. And the reaction will be in a very direct way. It will be in a more indirect way, putting economic and financial pressure on South Africa, not even formally, just deprioritizing South Africa. Let's take one example. The AGOA agreement for trade between South Africa and the United States of America. This is a treaty that will be, that is to the advantage of South Africa. You can just shift that aside. But coming back to the war, my take on it is a high-risk decision. On the one side, the president in the State of the Nation said that we need that these countries, Ukraine, Russia, need to negotiate a settlement. But then on the other side, close to Richards Bay, we are taking part in a military exercise with China and Russia. That does not seem to be aligned to each other. There is a great element that some people are saying only one South African ship took part, but it's a sense of political cooperation. And currently, if we look at the human rights record of specifically Russia with regard to that war, there's without any doubt war crimes that took place there. Now we can take the point of war crimes to many areas, but South Africa in our constitution is upholding the core principle of human rights. The same is applicable to the Chinese and their approach to many things. So I think it is highly problematic. It is definitely negatively for our economy. And I think it is the wrong way to align with the situation in a war that at the moment, if I look at the composition of that war and what's going on, is going to take probably a long time. And I think the West is the stronger power within that context. If you include the whole of NATO, you include Japan, Australia, and a number of other countries. So I think we took the wrong decision, and we are going to pay a penalty for it.
Yeah, Prof, you know, there's always this old adage, no empire lasts forever. And many say that the end of the West is nay. I mean, you're looking at China coming to the fore, India there, Russia taking a step ahead. And, you know, you notice that the South American countries are getting bold and all forming another bloc altogether. And it seems like the UK, the US, and, you know, a few others, are even if you're looking at, you know, those countries that are like Germany and so forth, are coming to a dead end. And how would you react to that, Prof?
Well, Shafat, yes, there were many works written on what people can call the so-called decline of the West. But the other side is also true, and that is the West, due to their economic development, due to their high living standards, due to a number of factors, are still the most popular parts of the world. And if people have to make choices, they will all go to Western countries. If we look at immigration processes and you look at your favorite countries, all of them are Western. But I agree that this post modern approach that the Western countries have, the lack of a population growth is in many ways problematic. And yes, there are huge power shifts, specifically from the West, the old power, looking at Western Europe, towards the East. But when it comes to technology, when it comes to information systems, skills and that type of things, I cannot see that the West in my lifetime is not going to be a huge factor in the world. Let's look at some of the oppositions, and I'm just going to mention a number of things. If we look at the Russians, in a way, communism was the continuation of the Russian Empire through a certain by making use of a certain ideology. And at the moment, the Russians are in trouble, and I think that already at this point in time, Russia won't count as a superpower anymore. What put them in that category is that about 6,000 nuclear arms they have, nuclear heads they are talking about. When you look at China, there's no doubt that China was one of the biggest economic change stories. I'm not going to call it a success story, and I will motivate that why. In recent history, in the whole history, basically. But it created a number of things. Their population policy make it only possible to have one child. And at the moment, they have a population that is aging, and they cannot get the economy to grow. There's an elite mass gap in China. Of the 1.3 billion people, only about 200 million benefit. And current from the economic growth pattern, so you have an elite mass thing. The instability in China at the moment. Many people are very concerned about the dynamics that are playing out in China. I think in a way, India has become a major power and source of influence. But my take on it is the West at the moment is still the dominant force in the world if they are combining forces like they combine in terms of the Russian onslaught. If you look at the political sanctions, if you look at NATO, I think NATO is the biggest combined military force in the history of the world at the moment. So, Shafat, this is only a few perspectives, but South Africa's position in this regard is problematic. We are aligning ideologically to the wrong side, away from our economic and financial interest at the time that our economy has about a 0% growth. And I think this is the wrong decision. It's the wrong line we are taking, despite the outcome of it. I think there's many things we can use at the moment to our advantage, not being part of that war. We can provide food. We can do a lot of things. We can even provide technology and sell technology and a number of things. We can use that situation to our own benefit. Now we are aligning towards one of these groups in a way that is not going to be to the benefit of South Africa.
Yeah, Prof, I'm looking at a question on the screen. It's a contribution from Mr. Faisal. He says, good morning, Professor Andre Duvanaga. With much respect, I'd like to disagree with you because it seems as if you are regurgitating the mainstream media's mantra that Ukraine is winning the war. But the reality of the situation is Ukraine is losing the war. Russia is winning the war. The ruble is gone stronger. China is getting stronger. And it seems as if more and more countries are joining the BRICS bloc and deserting these people, so-called superpower America, Britain, and Germany. They are all joining hands with Putin. Putin must be called the savior of the moment, not like what the mainstream media is saying. And a man of your intelligence should read in between the lines. I respect you, Prof. Please forgive me for my strong language. How do you respond to Faisal, Prof?
We must agree to disagree. I am following that war, Shafat, on literally a daily basis, following different reports from different media groups, from within Russia, from within the Ukraine, from broadcasting corporations throughout the world. And there's a number of things that is quite clear. And you can look at the progress of that war. It's definitely so that the Russians are in trouble. And this is not just mere propaganda. They are in trouble. To the extent that they have this second and I think about third mobilization, they are currently mobilizing additional troops. They have lost already, I think, 120,000 people, a lot more than they have lost in the Afghanistan war that stretched over probably a decade or more. And at the moment, the sanctions are putting huge pressure. There are internal instability within Russia. Putin has changed his generals four or five times. I think more than 10 generals lost their lives in that war. At the moment, I know there is the spring offensive that is planned from the side of Russia, mobilizing 300,000 people, some say up to 500,000 people. But clearly, the Russians at the moment, where we stand at the moment, my take on it, and that is the interpretation of also senior academics, and I had conversations with them inside South Africa and with people outside South Africa, that the Russians are in real trouble, and they are not winning the war. They are isolated internationally. They have this BRICS thing. China is not fully part of that war. China is standing on the outside. India is not part of that war in a military sense. Maybe they are buying cheap oil from the Russians. But my take on it clearly is, and I stand with that, is that the Russians are in serious trouble. If there's going to be a formal fight between NATO and Russia, and if you look at the military power, on the one side versus on the other side, there's no chance that the Russians can win that war. They can go nuclear. If they go nuclear, there will be strong counteraction. We have already seen that the Russian military technology is outdated. Their logistics is not working. There's a lot of corruption among the Russian soldiers. There are revolts within the Russian army against commanders. About 500,000 people fled Russia because they don't want to be conscripted and going to the war. If you look at Putin, there are now for about a year strong allegations going that Putin is a very sick man. Putin has, some people reckon, blood cancer and Parkinson's disease, but he is clearly in trouble. Some people, maybe it's propaganda, this one, are saying he are working with doubles. There was a number of assassination attempts on Putin. The Russian economy is in real trouble. You can look at the effect it have on ordinary Russians. So I rest my case there. We must agree to differ. Things can change in a war field. There can be a spring offensive, and the Russians can make huge progress. Some of the military observers are saying that the next 6 months is going to be critical for the war and for the Ukraine. We know that there are American Abrams tanks now deployed in the Ukraine, also the German Leopard tanks that are deployed. So to me, there is a serious problem for the Russians. I don't think that a country like China will easily, openly, fully support Russia, because the Chinese economy is completely dependent on Western markets. And the Chinese are very concerned about their own economic position. There are even, in some levels, indications that there may be confrontations between the Russians and the Chinese about certain lands that were part of historical conflicts many times ago. So what I can motivate and continue on that line, but at the moment, it's not good for the Russians. That's my general assessment.
I like what you said. And on the other hand, you said, oh, poor Putin is sick and he's got this and that, Parkinson's disease. I mean, let's talk about the American president. You got Joe Biden. How well is Biden? He didn't know which door to go to, what to say when he's talking. He doesn't know what he's saying. And how's he making decisions? God only knows. Because if you look at America, America has imploded from within. And there's also strikes. There's natural disasters in the country. They say that they are playing with the dollar money, which is a fiat money, because America is in debt, trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars. And they're playing with the Saudi equation, or the petrodollars, and without the backing of the oil-rich Saudi and all these other countries, America is another cardboard gangster. How would you react to that, Prof?
Well, yes, you can analyze the American society. It is society with its own challenges. It is a very violent society, but it still has very strong political systems in place. It is in many ways a strong state. If you look at the economic impact of the Americans, despite the debt situation, they are still the biggest economy in the world. And from a sustainable perspective, I think at the moment, they are probably more sustainable than the Chinese in China. There's a lot of instability, but we don't know about it because the media aren't open in China, but the media is open in the United States of America. You can argue that there are atrocities in the wars America were involved by, and I think many people are following that line. And my take on it is very simple. If you win the war, you are writing the history. And I am just concerned that at this point, I don't think we must look at Biden. Biden, I want to go the other way with Biden. I think Biden created a huge alliance of Western powers in a few months of time, bringing NATO together after the Trump era, where there was a lot of conflict between the U.S. and Western countries, like, for example, Germany, and even on certain levels, Britain. I think Biden did a fine job. I know Biden has health problems, but the thing about the Americans, they have a huge system going, a complicated system. The difference with the Russians is the whole system is basically focusing on the Tsar Putin, and that is making the difference. Putin is everything. Tomorrow you can take Biden away, and you can easily replace Biden with another president, and it's not going to have a huge impact. If you take Putin away out of Russian politics, then it will have a fundamental influence on the continuity of that system.
Prof, they say that the Republicans and the Democrats in America are the heads and tails of the same coin, because they are all well run, and you know they are manipulated by AIPAC, the American Israeli Press Affairs Committee. It is this committee that decides who the next president of the United States of America will be, and it is this AIPAC that has America giving Israel that very strong support in the Middle East. And should America pull its support away from Israel, it will just fall down like a pack of cards or like a domino effect. What's your thoughts on that, Prof?
Yes and no. The Americans has a huge influence on Israel. They are supporting Israel in many ways in the Middle East. It's not always a straightforward, easy relationship. We must also take into consideration that there are huge financial and economic interests with a Jewish origin in the United States of America, but not only in the U.S., throughout the world, supporting Israel. I know that the Germans are very much involved also in supporting Israel. So Israel has the sympathy, has the support of the West in ways that I think going bigger than the United States alone. But I agree that the United States are the kingpin in supporting Israel. But what is also true is that Israel is developing technology to the next level. And sometimes the Israelis are selling that technology to many countries. They are not always dependent on countries. They are part of bigger military industries, and they are influential in terms of their contributions, their innovations, and so on. And Israel, in many ways, is a strong country because they have the spirit of survival. They have this history of the Bible behind them, and history and culture is playing a strong role. So from a strategic point of view, I think there's more to Israel than only American support. But yes, the American support is a critical factor in that context.
You know, Prof, before I let you go, you talk about the history of the Bible. But it's amazing to me that the Christian church, they would pray for Israel when the Jews, they don't believe in the Christ Jesus. They don't accept him as a Messiah. They don't accept him as, you know, a prophet of God. They are still waiting for the Messiah.
Yeah.
But how come, you know, and many have said, no, these were Christ killers and so forth, but they don't believe in Jesus. And how can, you know, we say, yeah, biblically that we can justify Israel when they don't even accept Jesus Christ as a Lord and Savior, Prof?
Shabbat, I think it has to do with more than the religious orientation of the Orthodox Jews. It has to do with the whole context of Israel, of the Bible, of Christ in that area, and so on. So it's a bigger historical connection that I think the Jews are sometimes using to their advantage. But to many Christians, Israel is still the place of Christ. Christ was born, and in that way, they will identify with that context and that environment. Secondly, I think Israel in some ways has a commitment to the bigger Western world, aligning them to the West in many ways, and that is making them in a way acceptable. But when it comes to religion, you know, everyone made his choice on his own ground. I have read time ago something that is very interesting. If you can't understand something, then it is faith. If you can understand something, it is not faith. And maybe for many people, it's a thing of faith and not a question of understanding.
Yeah, blind faith is dangerous. Very dangerous indeed. Prof, I tell you, I really enjoyed the rapport with you. As you said, we may agree to disagree, we may agree in that. But thank you very much for, you know, having a brilliant rapport with us this morning. And you, perhaps your parting words before I let you go, Prof.
Well, Shafat, what is important to me is that we can differ, but we must take part in the academic debate. That is what the academia is all about. It's a constant debate about ideas based on certain values, certain points of departure. And you need to motivate yourself from a certain value system, verify yourself and come to certain conclusions. The other thing is, my understanding, coming from a Christian Reformed background, we will never fully understand our world. We will only understand partially. And that is part of my belief system. That is why, as an academic, you should always be in a position to try and learn to understand better, but you won't reach the point where you can fully understand your world and related dynamics.